Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Yeah, it's a small group, so you can. There's a response expected here. So, good morning, everybody. Yeah, we're gonna make up with numbers with energy. So you gotta stay engaged. Thank you. So I'm Brian Castrucci. I'm the Chief Program and Strategy Officer from the De Beaumont Foundation. This is Jim Pearsall, who is our workforce consultant, and we're going to talk today about some of the workforce activities that we're doing at De Beaumont and how that is leveraged and led to the creation of the National Consortium for Public Health Workforce Development and some of the early workings of that group. And ultimately, what we really want today is to have input from you all into this process, and that's an important part of this. So I think we all sat through sessions yesterday and Sunday, and there's a lot of talking to, and we want to talk with. And so just to set up where we're going today in our presentation, we have no conflicts in regard to this presentation. I'm sure we're conflicted in any number of other ways,
hugely conflicted.
But not here. So if you don't know about the De Beaumont Foundation, and I think when we started to present a couple years ago, no one knew about the De Beaumont Foundation, but I think a fair number of us in the room now do, so I'll be brief. We are a national public foundation that, or national private foundation, that believes in a strong governmental public health system. We fund training and infrastructure development and data and information, all really to bolster that governmental public health system as the backbone of really achieving health in the U.S. We are a national funder, domestic only, and we are in Bethesda, Maryland. The gentleman who's pictured on the slide is our founding donor, Pete De Beaumont, who founded Brookstone. And when he passed, he had endowed our foundation, and we continue a lot of the innovative work that he started with Brookstone. So this is one of my favorite quotes from the Journal of Public Health Management and Practice, which is a fabulous journal, and if you really like public health systems and services and chronic disease and the kind of workforce stuff we're talking about, it is a really worthwhile journal to get a hold of and read regularly. But this is a quote from Woltring and Novick, and Lloyd Novick is actually the editor of JPHMP. The workforce is the most essential element in our collective efforts in assuring the public's health. And anybody here who is tweeting, please tweet your hearts out. Really, let's get all this information. So even though people couldn't be here, they can read it all on Twitter, which is good. So we have a lot of challenges right now in the public health workforce. We know about the retirements, the shrinking workforce, competition among ourselves for limited funds. We often focus on our silos, and we have the categorical funding streams. A lot of this information is included in the Public Health Wins survey, and so there's right now a supplement of the Journal of Public Health Management and Practice that presents 15 articles on the public health workforce, and there's a fabulous infographic that is still for free at the De Beaumont booth, but I understand it's going to go off at a premium sometime today. So after this session, I would go to the booth. Thank you, Vanna. Here is the infographic. And so it's a great resource for just quick information on the public health workforce. And then if you're a real data geek and public health nerd, you go to the journal and get the real deep dive. So this is an example of one of the panels from the infographic. And this is just some real good data that we haven't had before. 38% of the workforce is saying they're going to leave by 2020. 18% say they're out in the next year. The West is more likely to have people leave than any other place in the country. Again, just really good information that we haven't had, because what Public Health Wins did is it asked the actual public health workers, right? We've had the profile surveys that ASTO and NACHO do, but the unit of analysis is the health department. The unit of analysis in Public Health Wins is the worker. It was 10,000 workers from state governmental public health agencies. So what I think we know, and we started this work when I joined the foundation 4 years ago. I had that experience of coming from practice, and I was probably at De Beaumont for a day or two, and someone called me and said, "Hey, Brian, you're an MCH guy. I have a great idea. Can we do budgeting for maternal child health professionals?" I thought, okay, that might be interesting. And then the next call came in and said, "Hey, Brian, hey, could we do budgeting for lab professionals?" And it was like, well, there's a common theme here. Do we each need to do it for our individual silo? Because we often work kind of in our silos, identify with our specialties, but we really need to find public health and the public health identity in our workforce and training. And the question there being, are we really greater than the sum of our parts? And so a lot of our recent workforce work kicked off with a convening that we did with ASTO. Jim used to be at ASTO, and we worked together, and Lacey was there. Lacey Wave, so everybody knows I'm not just calling out people randomly. We brought together leadership from all of the ASTO affiliates, leadership from APHA, NACHO, and really sat down with a simple question. And that question was, what are the cross-cutting needs in public health training? Not in maternal child health, not in lab, not in chronic disease, but what is it for the entire workforce? And this was a great graphic that came out of that work. And it's really, what are the public health worker attributes? So across 31 leaders, across ASTO peer groups, this is what this group came up with. Is these are what people need to know. They need knowledge of data, of policy process, public health role, healthcare system, QI, systems thinking. They need skills, communication, being data savvy, management, critical thinking. And they need to be open, servant leaders, politically sensitive. They need to value differences, and they need a learning spirit. And this is where, regardless of where you are, and if you actually go to the Journal of Public Health Management and Practice, do you see a theme? If you go to the journal, there is a article that talks about all this. It's called Thinking Beyond the Silos. And the first author is Kaufman, and the second author is a charming, dashing person who I've met. He's great. Castrucci, I think. We also identified these top training needs. So systems thinking came out as the number one top training need. Change management, communicating persuasively, information analytics, problem solving, diversity and inclusion, resource management, and policy engagement. So again, you're looking at folks who are responsible and charged with the care and feeding of a membership of a specific group. So, you know, AMCHIP is the Title V directors. Chronic disease directors, it's that group. Safe States is the injury directors. And they said, you know, beyond our groups, this is what we think are the top needs for our public health workforce in general. But some other things came out as well. The folks said that we need a consortium model to monitor training needs and identify needed trainings. And so they wanted folks to bring stakeholders together with bottom-up collaboration and get some agreement on priorities. So essentially, if you read the article, what the spirit of this was that we don't necessarily have a singular national voice for public health workforce training, and we kind of need it. And so how do we set, we as the practitioner community, how do we set an agenda that we can share with our federal partners, that we can share amongst ourselves? Because, you know, ultimately, it doesn't make sense for each of us to do a 5-cent training on the same topic. It makes more sense to put that together and do a 10-cent training, which would be better, because we're all kind of fighting over the little piece of meat that's there for this, and there's just not enough to feed us all. But if we work together and we are more thoughtful in our approach and agenda to workforce training, maybe we'll get more people fed with the same amount of meat we have now. And folks, we're also looking for a centralized quality training that maps to actually position types. So that was really the platform on which we launched the National Consortium for Public Health Workforce Development. This was the response. So De Beaumont, I think something that we're relatively proud of is that we have a kind of model of we ask, and then we act, and then we evaluate. So doing that first kind of convening was our ask. What do you need? What are the things that will help the workforce? And so I think we all get frustrated when we go places and we get asked questions and then nothing else happens. So this was really our response. So the group said, again, leaders from 31 different public health membership organizations, leaders from ASTO peer networks, they said to us clearly, we need someone to take a leadership role and bring us together and get this kind of consortium together and give us a real plan for action in workforce, taking into account everything that's already been going on with, you know, the core competencies and other assessments and the work of the training centers. So how do we bring it all together in a more cohesive kind of presentation and actually get action moving forward? So with that ask, we then acted. And this is where we are. And so we have already started this process with the National Consortium for Workforce Development. And the good Mr. Pearsall is going to take it from there.
Great. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. Thanks again for being with us. I'm going to take you through some of the deliberations of the consortium's conversations, so that you can hear sort of what they're thinking, what they're speculating on. And then we're going to invite you, during the course of that this presentation, to comment among yourselves and reflect on some of the thinking that's going on up to this point. So the goal, we really want to be pretty specific and not wait around. So by 2020, equip the public health workforce with the cross-cutting skills that assure successful application of public health solutions. We have good basic science knowledge. The barrier is we need in public health better efforts given towards opening the door so that the solutions can flow. And so speaking just with the voice of science doesn't always get heard in the public sector. And these cross-cutting skills, we think, clear the way for good science to occur. As Brian said, these are many of the national partners. There's the National Leadership Academy for Public Health has been engaged with us, certainly HRSA and CDC. I wanted to point to the bottom of this slide, these peer networks. These are directors within state health agencies, senior deputies, environmental health directors, preparedness directors, chief financial officers. These folks also were represented in this conversation to really get a sense of the sort of cross-cutting interest, not just only the affiliates, but these important peer networks that make work happen in public health. So the process was we reconvened in January and began a six-month dialogue of engagement and drafted ways of stating this report in different iterations. Then we convened in June with a convening of practitioner consortium members. So someone from Safe States doing injury prevention came and worked over sort of the conversation up to that point to sort of validate and refine where we've been. And what we're going to talk with you today about are some preliminary unofficial recommendations and seek your input before finalization. But I see that there are some folks in the room who actually sit on the consortium. And so I would like you to stand up and introduce yourself and then tell us what your particular interest is and who you represent. Ron? Beautiful. Thanks. Susan?
Susan Gepler. I'm with one of the associate leaders for the Director of Health Promotion and Education. So obviously our members are interested in workforce development, and our members work in a cross-cutting way.
Tracy?
Hi, I'm with the
Great, thank you. And I don't think there's anyone else at the moment. Okay, great. We may have others join us. So I'm really just trying to represent the views of these folks involved. The target audiences here, just like the foundation's target audiences, are federal, state, and local public health workforce, the tribal public health workforce, and territorial public health workforce, and their agencies, their affiliate associations, and the like. So who needs the training and who might provide the training are where we're really focused. So what are the potential impacts that have been driving the consortium conversations? We think these four things are really drivers for what we've been thinking about and are the key themes that have come out of our conversations. Focusing on these cross-cutting skills improves short-term public health impacts linked to longer-term health gains. You know, one of the ball and chains that we drag around in public health is waiting 20 years for a bend in the health curve. And we need short-term impact indicators that are in alignment with those longer-term solutions. And we think focusing on these skills brings some of that driving perspective into play. We think these cross-cutting skills supports focus on effectiveness and efficiency. That is going to be the catchphrase. It's been for a while, and it's going to be into the future in government work. And we think these fit nicely there. These cross-cutting skills assures transferable skills for a mobile and changing workforce. So not only do we have the retirees, but we have these millennials who are not going to stick around if the job doesn't have engagement and meaning and value. And so this idea of building this skill set, so we keep them in public health, but they might leap from HIV program over to MCH, over to chronic disease, in a course of a career transition. And having these skills helps them apply the unique knowledge that they're going to be responsible for in a more effective way, we think. And then these cross-cutting skills builds employee flexibility, diversity, inclusion, and retention through development. One of the strong things that came out of the June meeting was the importance of inclusion of diverse populations in the workforce, so that we can anticipate the near future of public health, both in terms of the audiences we serve, but the workforce we have and its own diversity. And so having this skill set develop among our workforce, we think is really foundational for improving public health. So practice has been sort of the driving thinking behind this. How do we get better at practice and in the work of public health? So the consortium is about a consensus-building process and being a voice for common interests. We talk about data-driven, and Brian mentioned some of the unique data that comes from Public Health Wins. It's been pretty helpful in our early stages of the consortium's work. We think these cross-cutting skills we've identified as priorities support and enable the basic science of public health, helping us get solutions in place. This fourth bullet, I think, is pretty crucial. We're not just talking about individual skills development. If we train these workers in these skills of systems thinking and change management, but have an organization that is not inviting and not responsive to the application of those skills, we're just going to pass right by each other. So the organization itself, the organizational development aspect of this, is just as important as the individual one. So thinking about how to do both, the individual worker and the organizational development, so that these things can fit together, we think is pretty crucial. And then we think that this work addresses changing public health demographics. The world in which we are working is evolving. The United States is getting bigger. It's going to be driven by increased net immigration. The United States is getting older. We know it's the baby boomers' age and its impact on health and related policy. And then we're becoming more racially and ethnically diverse, which is why the importance we focused on diversity and inclusion in these recommendations. So this should not be unfamiliar to you. The Council on Linkages core competencies have been around for 15 years. This skill set overlaps directly with those. There was strong sentiment in the consortium to keep an alignment between these skills and those core competencies. So if you think of the core competencies as the endpoint, working on these skills gets us to that endpoint. And I think you'll notice also in the core competencies that they are for novice, intermediate, and advanced. So we think these skills apply all across the board as well. And so leading to that end is pretty important. In 2012, CDC convened a pretty large group to sort of map out a future, and four things that they identified as workforce development priorities around the competencies of workers were incomplete on the competencies. We think these eight saturate the need there for the core competencies. We're lacking a system for continuous learning. Again, thinking of the practitioner in place. There's insufficient investment in training, and workers need new skills. So we couldn't have a more clear alignment with where CDC has been focusing its attention. The HRSA in the Public Health Training Centers, and if any of you attended the session yesterday of the Public Health Training Centers, you heard some of that. They also are really interested in supporting access to the kinds of training we're talking about here. So their engagement and Public Health Training Center involvement in our work has been strong through the National Coordinating Center of the National Network of Public Health Institutes. Certainly the Public Health Accreditation Board standards and measures these align very closely with. They dovetail nicely with the prerequisites as well as the standards themselves, which are built on the 10 essential services plus administration and governance, which would be resource management and policy engagement. And so the overlap there is quite clear. And you'll see in one of our recommendations how we link directly to the accreditation process. The Institute of Medicine based work on foundational capabilities. That work is coming out now. Resolve has been working with others. I think there's a Center for Innovation about to help carry some of this work forward. But these focus on foundational public health capabilities around assessment, which is surveillance, lab, and epi, preparedness, policy development and support, communications, community partnership development, and organizational competencies, including governance, health equity, accountability, performance management, QI, informatics, HR, etc. So, direct overlap. And then finally, with regard to the schools of public health and programs of public health, the framing the future recommendations, particularly in the governmental sector, you'll see direct overlap with where they're thinking of heading and these skill sets. So I see all of these national initiatives as providing us where the target where we're aiming for, and the conversation we're having about putting actions into play are going to get us to achieving all of those common aims across there. And I think finally, the idea of public health's role in health transformation is a pretty key one, and that these foundational skills directly relate to that. As healthcare shifts towards quality and outcomes, the conversation will drive upstream from managing illness to prevention of illness to maximize wellness of the public. The ability of public health workers to communicate effectively with policymakers based on advanced information analysis and wide-ranging collaborative interventions will lead to rational, cost-effective health solutions. Better population health is the best prescription for the crushing effects of poor health on costs and access to care. So this has been a really driving theme around the health transformation value of this cross-cutting skill set. And as I mentioned, these national initiatives here, if you look further into the national work on a learning health system and a learning health community, you will still see these same skills as crucial in terms of how things play out. I won't repeat those, but you can find those. So, to restate, these are the top eight training needs as we see them going forward. So I'd like to drill down into these for a moment, just so that you can take not just those two words, but an understanding of those words. Looking at patterns and relationships to understand the systems contributing to public health problems and identifying health impact interventions options. So clearly social determinants feeds into systems thinking in this way. There's an article in the American Journal of Public Health, March 2006, Systems Thinking and Modeling Applied to Public Health Practice, that conforms with some of this thinking. With regard to change management, the ability to scale programs up and down in response to the environment and the ability to identify and sustain core elements are going to be important moving forward in public health. So what are the skills needed here? A general understanding of the change process and the components of change, strong analytics, flexibility in working around roadblocks and evolving priorities, ability to recognize and assess disruptive circumstances, things that are going to tip you over, and ability to find supportive networks. So that's all about that change management skill set, which really needs to be a focus of attention, we think. Communicating persuasively is the ability to convey a public health message that resonates with audiences outside of public health. When we talk to each other, we understand the public health speak, but no one else really outside of that gets it. So this is important to that we communicate effectively and persuasively with policymakers, the media, partners, the lay public, and create good visibility for the field. The next one, information and analytics. It should go without saying that the integration and use of electronic health records will be essential to accurately forecasting emerging public health issues as we move forward. So our ability to take the best of what we've had so far, disengage from what's not working, and move towards a more sort of common and integrated appreciation of data, and moving towards an understanding of analysis of big data, wherever its source comes from, is really going to be a key driver going forward. Problem solving, we think this is a really nice link with the 10 essential public health services, the CQI, continuous quality improvement, and performance management efforts that are underway and are sort of foundational to the accreditation work and are foundational to improving performance. So problem solving has to do with determining the nature of the problem, identifying solutions, implementing solutions, and monitoring and evaluating response. So problem solving has a key place to play in this skill set for the effective public health worker. So diversity and inclusion go hand in hand. Diversity reflects the demographic change and the workforce itself, and inclusion represents the effort needed to fully incorporate workers representing diverse populations into health solutions, a key component of our work. Resource management. When we first started out this conversation, as Brian mentioned, a few years ago, this was really called fiscal management. It was focused narrowly on that. In the course of our conversations over the last 9 months, we've sort of concluded that it's really about human capital, capital improvements, funding and the management of funds and access to funds and the like. So the whole idea of rethinking how we access and develop resources is pretty important. And you can think of fee-for-service initiatives that are now underway as a new way to gauge and invest in solutions around resource management. And I think I don't see anyone from NHO at the moment, but they're just launching a new training initiative around inserting fee-for-management solutions into their practice. So a really good example of that. And then finally, policy engagement relates to the direct, the indirect, and complementary skills needed to address the public health concerns and the needs of policymakers around that. Here's where the Public Health Wins data has really provided us a fresh look at what we think policy engagement needs to be addressing. They talk about three top training needs that both the executives and the employees agree on. The first is influencing policy development. The second, which I find really useful, is understanding the relationship between a new policy and many types of public health problems. So whether you are in a setting that has an aggressive and liberal public health agenda, or if you are in a setting that has a less aggressive and conservative public health agenda, recognizing the policy that's coming into play and its impact on public health problems and to be able to engage in that conversation is crucial. And then thirdly, assessing the broad array of factors that influence specific public health problems. We all need those skills in understanding not only our own policies, but the policies that our sisters and brothers and mothers and children to our policies and are going to affect the way we think of those things. So we think these are the core set going forward for 2020. So now we're going to talk about the recommendations, and then this is where you get to come into play. So hopefully I've set the stage sufficiently for you to get an appreciation of the consortium, the things it's been thinking about and trying to reconcile. And here we have a preliminary set of recommendations that we think are geared to state and local public health. So if you would do me the favor of turning to a neighbor or neighbors and look at these three items and determine your level of concurrence with these and any other thoughts you have about these three skill sets. Now, if you, the first one here, we find in pockets around the country that the core competencies have been embedded into job descriptions. And I think as accreditation moves forward, you're going to see more and more state and local doing that. This is just to reinforce that point, and it's certainly not universal at this stage. Should we include these as a preference in hiring? We think it should, these kinds of skills. And then establishing rewards and incentives for currently employed staff to do that. So if you would get together, and we're going to give you about 2 to 3, 4 minutes to talk among each other. If you're away from someone, slide across and have a chat. Ready, set, go. All right. You're going to be able to keep chatting because we've got a couple more slides to go with. So let's pause for a moment. And let's hear on this first one. and include these key skills, core competencies, in all relevant job descriptions. Does any group have a comment about that first one? Please stand up and share it. I can't hear you. The first one up here, you were talking about it. Yeah, Rick. Yes. Okay, great. Good advice. Let's look at the second one, as preferences in hiring, including these skills. Someone's thoughts in your group, your conversation. I see heads nodding. Seem to make sense? Okay. And then the third one, establishing reward systems and incentives for current employees to improve these skills. I'm really interested in this, so if you have a comment, because I have a concern at the very end about this, learner motivation. So what were your thoughts on this? Somebody? As you were discussing this third one. Yes, Susan. Let's move on to, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Jim, in my group, I was wondering whether embedded in one of these bullets is the evaluation system that's used to evaluate employees so that you would know who should be rewarded or incentivized, so I'm not sure.
Let me flip to the next slide, and you'll see the first bullet. Is include ski in performance. So thank you for thinking of that. So these are, do we have the metrics for relevant employees? Should have policies that are provided with the time and support to take advantage of available training, just building on that last comment we just heard. And then use cross-cutting skills development to prepare staff for FAB accreditation. Almost every conversation I've heard about a state or local health agency going through FAB accreditation has been, how do we get people on the same page? You know, we're really pretty well aligned, but conversationally, we think these skills really just feed right into that, setting the stage for engaging in that accreditation process. And if you've been accredited, these skills are going to help you do your annual sustaining reporting about progress and success. So again, if you could go into your groups and have a conversation about these three. We've touched a little bit on the first two, but I'm particularly interested in your take on this third recommendation. So I'm going to give you 2 or 3 minutes to talk about that third one and or the other two if you like. Ready, set, go. If I could hear from one group that has some thoughts about this. Yes, ma'am. Okay, hang on 1 second. Can we have everybody's attention, please? Hang on. Thank you.
Challenge had from that. All of our jobs have to be state
and just to sort of push back just a teeny bit, is to say there's got to be other governmental agencies interested in the same performance skill set as you are. And if you can find those folks...
It's not an obstacle to go along.
Okay, great. Anyway, thank you.
Years.
Somebody else, a group we haven't heard from. Oh, great. Anybody want to tackle the FAB one in your conversations? Yes. Yes, sir.
Yeah, you thought it was a great idea. The concern I raised was that the FAB accreditation seems like the number one skill development activity is around proper documentation.
Mm-hmm.
That's a huge task.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that's for that to take some time, but it's a great idea.
Great. Let's move on. We have some recommendations now for funders. And so we think that grants should include some kind of performance standard or metrics to demonstrate the importance of these skills in the funder FOAs. That CDC should build these cross-cutting skills into programs like those listed and others to reinforce the importance of these skills and build the leadership for public health. I'm going to give you two more, so keep those two in mind. Should be an allowable expense to focus on these cross-cutting skills in an FOA. Funders should support the development of high-quality training where it isn't available. There's all kinds of conversation about how to get training to a place. And systems should be in place to make it easier for agencies and individuals to identify high-quality training. You know, we have lots of training online. Which is the best of those 25 that might be about change management? So if you could focus on those two sets of questions, this set for funders and this set. And I'll flip back and forth as you get to your group. Ready? Set? Go. All right. Let's hear what you have to say. Let's start with these first two. Did any of your conversations have something to say about these kinds of recommendations? Anybody?
Our group actually not talked about these two. We were really focused on
this slide. Okay, great.
I was just thinking that.
Programs that should be listed in the second one.
Yep.
Like GSAP and others. But I think.
Great. Let's go on to the next one then. Some of your thoughts on these. Yes.
What
You know, I was with another group, the National Leadership Network, yesterday, and they were talking about this very topic and the desire they have to sift through the many possible things and sort them. And so it occurred to me that wouldn't it be nice if other groups who have access to these kinds of trainings take these skill sets and say, look, we've combed through, and these are the best to go, and then bring them to the table, you know. And so that's where we're trying to get these recommendations, is not the consortiums or the de Beaumont Foundations, but yours to deliver on. So it would be very interesting to see that come about. Yes, Ron. I think it's a safe bet that de Beaumont has that on their agenda to bring the conversation to the Grantmakers in Health. Yes?
This is a different sort of interest. I'm going to make sure to do. I'm neither a vet nor a public health person, but I have been on an IR committee, in person, on another federal advisory panel. And I'm worried because I see a lot of groups writing, nobody should.
Uh-huh.
And they largely are ignored. And I'm worried that we may be close to that here. I think it's really important that this one not be. So, to me, it's not so much articulating what needs to happen, so much as articulating why, not just to a senior vet, but to the branch chief, so that they can understand it. Because if they don't want to do it, it's probably not going to, unless you get it congressionally mandated, it's not going to happen. So, I'm a little worried that this is going to put a what. Maybe that's because we think the why is so compelling. At least within federal agencies, I don't hear
the why being understood.
Great.
Shelley. So, dovetail on that, you know, there is this plethora of reports out there that say should, shall, et cetera, and they collect a lot of dust. But one of the, my experience shows taking those kinds of reports, you know, you can't maybe mandate it that there's a lot of challenges there, but you really could very easily get it put into report language so that Congress, you know, a member of Congress gets it, and there are a lot of them that do, who would put in there that CDC shall report back on what they're doing.
Got you. Beautiful. Please.
And after it's gone, when we're not devolved as we be the consortium members, I would also love to see this be not just, and you know, everybody, many of the people who want to do something about these things are members of the consortium. So I would rather this turn into I will.
Yes.
Something. You know, the Beaumont will, TCC will, and they're part of Universal will, so it's more like the Clinton Global Initiative where you're showing up to the consortium with a, this is really important, and from what I can do my organization, we're going to take it.
And I think that's the consortium's belief as well, that these won't end up being shoulds, but I will. And that's the idea behind the consortium, is that we will, we collectively, will take on a piece of the action. Yes, ma'am.
I just want to make a little bit of a cynic comment here. Somebody who is working in an education field, and I have federal education grants, where it's been embedded within there the requirement to have training. And what happens is it becomes codified by the Department of Education, and they define who the trainer vendor is and what they qualify as. In fact, I had one of my staff members just here in Chicago 2 weeks ago at one of those defined trainings, and she was like, oh, what a sleeper, I went to this 20 years ago. And vendors become in bed, so to speak, because they're part of the approved high-quality trainers, and they make a living off of this, but it doesn't help anybody in the long run at all. So that's my cynic point to put to this. How are you going to control that aspect of it?
Point well taken, and good advice. Let's roll on. So we think that the associations can do something as well regarding filtering and focusing, and that this joint strategy for coordinating support might address that very point that you're talking about, is not getting handcuffed by some kind of federal approach that's limiting. So I'm not going to ask you to dive into these two. These two look sort of self-evident and sort of reflect the comments that we've heard so far. Here's one that I think is interesting to me with regard to the academic partners and focusing on training in place for existing workers, particularly those moving up. I'm not sure where we are in the world of continuing education with regard to schools and programs of public health and their ability to be invited in to do training in place. But it seems to us that this, with the Framing the Future driving some of the schools and programs of public health thinking, that there ought to be a way to make this linkage occur. So I think we have potential there. Okay, here's four more recommendations. I'm going to ask you to go into your group. Oh, did you have a comment, Lacey? Please.
A question on the previous slide.
Yep.
Is that all sorts of training, degree and non-degree?
Yes. Yeah.
I would just add on that one.
Please. And I think that's a dialogue between the health agency and the academic institution to come together, and financing that has to be a part of that conversation, and how will that work and who pays it. So, good point. Yeah. Local or in state health agencies.
Yes.
Great. Great, thanks.
Jim,
please.
Also, I don't know if you have SEEK involved at all in addition to academic institutions, but that's what we pay attention to.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the language in the guidelines and the requirements isn't up to date or isn't ideal, then you work through SEEK.
Great.
And I'm not sure just only existing health department employees, and we're talking about workforce development, but also those who are currently in the pipeline, so that those who are coming out with a degree have skills as part of their training.
You will see in a slide coming up here that very point. So let me run ahead to those. That's the first bullet right there, is to align the academic program curricula with the cross-cutting skills. So I would think that the Framing the Future recommendations should translate into curricular change around these kinds of skills with regard to capability of the public health workers moving forward. So. So what I'd like you to do is take one of the four of these questions in your small group. I'm intrigued by the fourth one. I think the third one is intended, but you might want to touch that, and the other two. So if you could take another 2 to 3 minutes in your small group to address these four, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Okay, let's hear what you have to say about one of these four. You're doing a great job. I want to compliment you on your dialogue and the quality of your recommendations. There are three groups we haven't heard from, so I'm going to point to that group back there and ask you to make a comment about any one of these four. Thank you. How about the duo in the back? That's right. Yeah. I just think that's ripe with possibilities for public health particularly, especially when you have that county next door, a lady left, that doesn't have a training fund. That's where it happens, and it has to happen, in my opinion. Great. And then this third group here. Thanks. And then anybody else want to throw out a comment on these four? Yes. That's how I was going to respond. I used to be an assistant director of a large state health department that had large union employment. And we whenever we could, we had quality improvements and mission-driven efforts, ask the union for input and direction to move from a positional place to a common interest place. And we were flexible till we could get that interest, that common interest defined. So I think there's a way for this to happen. It has to be inspired by both sides to sit down and make it happen. But
we have to have the right kind of leadership. I did want to also comment on that last bullet point. I think most health departments have a learning management system in place.
Yeah.
Where a lot of those things, you know, a lot of that is happening already. I know I've built training skills that I'm for our public health, the people that I work with in preparedness and response at the state and the local level, but I think across the agency, I don't know that it's really encouraged or done consistently.
And I think that's what we're getting at, and with this cross-cutting skill set, we cut across preparedness, everybody, HIV, chronic disease, across the board. Okay. Yes.
Well, with public health, it's to bring together a team of a variety of professionals from all different disciplines with different kinds of certifications and things like insurance.
You bet.
You know, and those all require additional education and sorts of things. But we don't really have something that cuts across all of those disciplines that's like a certification with either a physician or educator or epidemiologist or a nurse. Maybe something like that could cut across all disciplines, especially if this is something that's a national initiative, where it is a certification for public health work, and then you would have ongoing continuing education to maintain that certification and have that incentivized in the job description.
And the funder arrangements or whatever we can do. Yeah. Excellent. Excellent. Great. Here's the last set of recommendations that we're percolating up for your inclusion. And these sort of stretch our thinking just a little bit. So if you would get in your group and pick one or more of those to tackle, we're going to let this be sort of our final conversation in terms of wrapping up. So ready, set, go. All right. Let's hear what somebody has to say about one of these three reactions. Okay, if we could have your attention, please. I'm going to restate it right now, yeah. She was adding on to her prior thought, which was around the certification about these cross-cutting skills. Wouldn't it be nice if academic programs offered a certification on these sets of skills so when you walk out the door you could say, not only am I an epidemiologist, but I'm certified in these foundational skills. Awesome. How about somebody else to comment on one of these three? Another group. Susan.
Developing those, we're not doing them within the health.
Great. Great. One last opportunity for a comment. All right, this has been very helpful to us. We hope that you've been intrigued by these recommendations. We hope that you'll stay tuned for the work of the National Consortium and that you will be part of the I Will group that takes these and move those forward. So I'm going to let Brian talk to next steps, and again, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks, Jim. You know, APHA, you never know when a focus group is going to break out. So thank you for participating in this interactive session. It really allows us to tap folks that we may not have known or we may not have had an opportunity to tap. So thank you for that. In the vein of things we need to promote, if you want to stay involved and be interested, and you're interested in this kind of work, follow the De Beaumont Foundation on Twitter. One of the recommendations, which I will go back to, partner with healthcare systems in public health workforce development. If you have any interest as a public health professional in working more closely with healthcare, you probably need to stop by the booth, the De Beaumont booth at 1035, that's 1035, and look at the practical playbook. Lloyd Michener, who's from Duke, who's been our PI for our practical playbook project, which really works on integrating primary care and public health together. There is a online resource around the playbook, but there's also the actual textbook, which I like a lot. And so it is available at a reasonable price at the Oxford booth, and you can see it at our booth. Otherwise, please engage us and stay involved. I'm on Twitter, the foundation's on Twitter, most of our projects, Practical Playbook's on Twitter, Big Cities Health Coalition's on Twitter. And to keep the conversation going, I think especially in the Twitterverse, there's such a underrepresentation of public health people, and we need to hear our voice because without voice, we're silent. Thanks everybody for coming today. We really appreciate it. Getting out here early in the morning after a whole night of receptions, it's appreciated. Have a good rest of the conference.
Thank you.